Welcome to La Liga Weekly, where Xavi's Barcelona lead the way. The XG differential cup is a dream for some, but stay strong, fellas, you can get there. If only his players could kick the ball into the net and make the occasional save, then they wouldn't have to suffer the injustice of being judged on actual points. Barcelona actually had a decent weekend in the real world, with Real Madrid and Girona both dropping points. Barca won away to Celta Vigo thanks to a doubly controversial penalty. No muttering about the forces of darkness from Xavi this week. As Girona are finished, Michel out, maybe he can replace Pep after Manchester City drew a game at the weekend. A shame. A patched-up Real Madrid might have drawn with Rayo, but they're 6 points clear at the top, and imagine how good they'll be when Mbappe finally arrives. Vinicius will make a great centre-back. We need to talk about Dani Carvajal's anger issues before he retires and starts a podcast. His red card at Vallecas was one of 67 issued by La Liga's Europe-leading referees this weekend. Or this season. Mallorca lost their skipper Antonio Rayo for applauding sarcastically. Yeah, well played, ref. The guy who warms up the subs is also sent off, presumably for not having a real job. I want the refs to start red carding the 16th bloke who comes onto the grass at half-time with a pitchfork, and the guy who gives out the rubber bands to the players before the match. La Liga sides have the most reds, the most yellows, and the top seven teams in the fouling charts of Europe's top five leagues. Maybe ease off a bit, lads, okay? And if you want some stats, have a look at Cadiz's expected goals. At this rate, they're next due to score in April 2027.
The same time as El Maria win a game.
Yeah. We'll start with Cadiz's stats, Terry. One goal in eight games. It was a dodgy penalty for a handball in the defensive wall. Their XG on, so the only one that they go over one is that game, because that the handball, the penalty obviously takes their XG. Other than that, it's like 0.5, 0.8, 0.7, 0.3, and there's 0.3 in two consecutive games. They're not missing chances. They don't create a chance. They have a shot.
It's four games now, isn't it? No goals for Maurizio Pellegrino. Two draws to start with. Now two defeats. And I look at, and I think it's been driving me mad, I have to be honest. They've got a selection of centre forwards and wingers that should be creating and should be scoring goals. Sergio refused to change, so we had Robert Navarro, Ivan Alejo playing down the flanks. No goals each. They've been pretty much the first choice wide players, at the expense of, in fairness, Darwin Machis and Brian Ocampo, who are really good. They have been injured, but they're both bit fit. They're both back involved in the squad now. I think Ocampo was injured at the weekend, but Darwin Machis eventually comes off the bench. Strikers, they've just signed Wanmi. They've got Chris Ramos, who's got five. And we were saying for a little bit of a period this year, he's doing well. It's a third of their goals, but five isn't anything to when you've been playing every game. That isn't fantastic. Ruben Sobrino hasn't scored a goal. Sergi Guardiola hasn't scored a goal. Maxi Gomez, likewise. Roger Marti has got two. Negredo, no goals. It's ridiculous that they went out to get loads of attacking players and Sergio refused to use some of them. Now Pellegrino is refusing to use some of them when he came in for his first start. He's just joined on loan. And it's just, I look at it and I'm thinking, whenever I get a team sheet at Cadiz, I'm thinking, try some different players because this lot, there's only one way you're heading. You're not going to stay up. You can't score a goal. So this time I get the team sheet and I just made a change. Yes, he's put a right back at his right wing. Zeldua came in and I'm thinking, well, where's he going to play? Is it a three at the back? No, Jorge Mera, he went to right back and then Zeldua went to in a front three with Wanmi and Chris Ramos at the expense of Darwin Machis. And I'm thinking, you know, try something different, but not try something. So he went to Osasuna looking to keep a clean sheet and get a sneaker draw. 15 goals is absolutely pitiful. I mean, you consider the points they've got. The points, 17 points with 15 goals. They're punching above their weight, to be honest. I mean, they've won for 21 games, I think it is now. And I'm not surprised. Yeah. When you keep picking the same players, you get the same result. And you pick the same system, then you decide to put a right back at right wing. Zeldu is a decent right back, but he's not particularly attacking. You know, he supports the attacking play, so I didn't see anything there in terms of a change of position playing Zeldu as an out and out right winger in a front three.
So there we are.
So bonkers.
Yes, that's Cadiz done controversially at the top. We don't normally start with Cadiz, but
I was just going to make that point. Yes, refreshing to go for the jugular. Attack a manager after four games and you've seen that and don't ever score a goal. It's not what we want to see in any football teams that just don't look like they're ever going to score a goal.
Yeah, don't even try to score a goal. Try to score a goal. Oh, right. So we go to Barcelona when we're talking about these dodgy stats. So they won 2-1 at Celta Vigo. Jack got in touch. One of our patreon.com.
So just mentioning that last one, we talked about Cadiz. We managed to get that game over with Osasuna.
Oh, yeah, go on.
Didn't mention Osasuna at all there. And Budimir got another two. And that's 13. So he's nearly matched Cadiz, anti Budimir. So it was a tidy victory, steady selection from Arasate, not numerous changes just for the sake of it, and it was a comfortable win. But what season Budimir is having, as I say, 13 goals, that nearly matches Cadiz in total, so that was a comfortable win for Osasuna.
Right.
Sorry, John. you have got Osasuna listeners. It's Henry, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes. Hi, Henry. What was I saying? Patreon.com/LTEL, that's it, to get involved and be a Patreon. Right, so Jack was talking about Xavi's press conference. So they beat Celta Vigo 2-1. Afterwards, I sympathise with the stress and pressure, he says, but no doubt over a sustained period. But his assessment of the game in the wider context of the last four games, I felt, was detached from reality. Similar to the Girona game, his view that Barcelona dominated and deserved the win was highly unconvincing, at least to this layman observer. He's got some thoughts on the penalty that he wants to share with us as well. But let's talk about... So he mentions the big data, the big sin Xavi did afterwards, which is relying on the backup data to explain or to somehow use as mitigation for the actual results that you're getting. Thomas Tuchel did it. So I looked it up in terms of XG differential. Tuchel's right. Bayern are, in fact, the top side in Europe. But partly because they've won one game 8-0 and one game 7-0. So it totally bumps up all of those background stats. It's a cliche. All the other stuff informs you, but it doesn't justify anything. The only ones that the cliche, the only one that matters is the points. So the only one you can really defend yourself on is the actual points. You can't defend yourself because your XG was good. That's just, people don't have it, and I understand why people don't want it, don't want to hear it.
I wonder how the process works on that after a match. I haven't been involved in football for a while now as a coach, but I wonder how quick that information is passed on to the manager before. Well, it must be quick.
Yeah, you're getting it in game now. You can get, if you go on, I mean, I recommend FootMob to people. It's got live.
But as a manager, should you be doing that? You're not. You can't do that and watch the game and assess.
Yeah, changes, but you've got
changes, substitutions.
You've got a 12-year-old on a laptop sitting next to you, haven't you? I was watching the Premier League game last night, and they went to this kid. Honestly, he looked about 15. Who was sitting? I can't remember whether it was Palace or Everton. They sit. I don't think. What, you can't employ him.
So it'd be interesting, the process after the match is finished, the whistle's blown, you've done the shake hands or run down the tunnel. Perhaps that's what Simeone does.
Lifts it down the
tunnel to get to a computer
to
work out what he's going to say in the post-match interview. I'm pretty sure it isn't. But some managers live and die by that now. Mm. And it's a worry that they feel that they have to use that rather than their football intelligence that they've just watched and then try and brush it off with stats that they've just been passed on, they've had passed on to them. Because Barcelona, I think they deserve to win the game, I have to be honest. I thought they were okay, to be honest. But you can't say they didn't dominate in the way that we've become accustomed to in the past, where they controlled possession and really dominated possession, and it made the possession always look like it was going to count it that wasn't the case. It was Barcelona really good to watch at the moment because their games are so chaotic and frantic. The outcome isn't as certain as it was in the past. So even in this game, it could have gone either way. It was close. I mean, I just thought Barcelona shaded it. And it was astonishing, actually, to hear Xavi afterwards say how well they played and how much they dominated when everybody can clearly see that wasn't the case. They didn't have control of that game. It was a great game to be involved in and working on because it was end-to-end and chances were, you know, at both ends of the pitch. It wasn't as controlled as Xavi would like to think. So I'm surprised that he's going down that route of using stats to give a narrative as opposed to what he actually sees, because I'm sure he's got incredible football intelligence and can read a game and can assess a game. But I guess it's just the pressure of the job, the expectations are weighing on him at the moment. And now we have this unusual situation where he's going to leave. And the pressure's building for the game away to Napoli this week, because the common consensus is if they were to go out of that, there'd be no point in keeping Xavi for the rest of the season. So you can tell the pressure. I mean, he's a young manager. It's his second full season. And you can tell that the pressure has got to him, which is a shame, but it is a measure of how important the job is at Barcelona for a manager that's still, I have to be honest, learning his trade.
Yeah.
So it's surprising that he's gone down that road instead of using his own thoughts, rather than being fed statistics that kind of something sort of backs him up a little bit.
Yeah. Right. Let me put Jack's second point here. Intrigued to hear your views about the penalty, the late penalty. I thought there were similarities with the one given to Mariano Diaz a few months ago against Alaves. Similarities for me lay in the fact that Lamine Yamal has essentially cynically thrown himself in front of the defender, knowing he's running in on his blind side and that the defender is naturally following through to clear the ball and will make contact and they may get a penalty. Technically a penalty, I just think it's a ridiculous and cynical way to win a penalty. I basically agree. It is now, when you see it happen, you're thinking, oh, they'll give that.
I think it's a clear penalty. I'm not so sure there was any cynical play.
Is Lamine Yamal trying to genuinely take possession of the ball? Or is
I think
he just
so.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I think he was in this case. Yeah. Mariano Diaz wasn't, because Mariano Diaz threw himself, didn't he? Minimal contact, and it was a bizarre way to fall, but it worked. But I think Lamine Yamal actually thought he could get there. And it was a difficult one for Beltran to... Thinking back in hindsight, if you're Beltran, you probably need to be aware that there might be someone, because the ball's in the air, it's coming down, it's travelling, someone... It's unlikely that you're going to have a free hit at it to clear it.
Mm, yeah.
And maybe you have to, your awareness should be, you know, perhaps late in the game, you're not as fresh as you was when you started, and maybe be aware. You do see players that they go to clear the ball and suddenly have a think because a player's getting across them and they refrain from following through. And sometimes you still see players go down and the referees don't bite and it's picked up by VAR. But I thought it was a penalty.
Yeah, you can't have a big swing at the ball anymore when you're clearing it.
Exactly.
Because
I mean, you have to be aware that late in the game, that important in the game, to have a wild swing when there's a possibility. There was always a possibility. It wasn't going to be a free hit. There was always a possibility when the ball was coming down that someone might make a challenge.
Mm.
So I thought. It's perhaps I've been naive, perhaps I'm being naive in thinking that a 16-year-old isn't thinking in a cynical way yet, and that was just enthusiasm to get across and to try and get on their ball and to try and regain possession at a crucial stage of the game. I mean, it's late in the game, you're trying everything, you're throwing the ball into the box, and I didn't think it was anything cynical, and he did get a kick. I mean, it was a fair old kick up the backside, and so once you have that type of contact, then I thought it was a penalty. I have more issue with the manner of Lewandowski's penalty and anyone that takes a penalty like that.
So talk us through that then, because it's becoming increasingly hard for goalkeepers to save penalties, isn't it?
Good. Which is one thing. So that there's staying on the goal line is one thing that I think has helped penalty takers. As soon as it was hit and you saw the replay and knew that it was off the line and knew it was going to be retaken. Then there was controversy over the second one. Excuse me. Because there is this, the same technique used by Lewandowski on both penalties, where there's a hop, step and a jump before the penalty is taken. And we're meant to have this forward motion law in the game where you can't stop it. We very rarely see it.
You've got to keep moving. Yeah.
And he does just. And there's a little shuffle at the end of his run prior to taking the shot on.
Yeah.
So he just about gets away with that. Now, is there a, should the law be adapted to stop that type of run-up? I don't know how you could, to be honest. That's a difficult one
to
say.
You would just have to police it properly, wouldn't you? I don't know how, It's very hard, isn't it, when you're looking at a TV replay, because because you can't stop the TV replay because you're trying to prove that he stopped, aren't you? It is hard, but I also think it's a bit unfair because they're basically, with that, trying to move the goalkeeper. And as soon as the goalkeeper lifts his heels off the ground now, the VAR can get him. So that's why it's hard to say.
I think a lot of these as well, a lot of those players that take these penalties in that type, in that way, there's luck involved. I'm not convinced that enough of them really have it down to a fine art where they wait for the goalkeeper to move and put it in the other corner. I mean, we saw with Lewandowski's first one, the fact that Huaita was off his line, I don't know if it was that important.
It wasn't off his line, was it? It didn't change the angles much,
And so Lewandowski didn't outfox him. I think there's a penalty taker there. You're banking a lot of these players that take it. We've seen Jorginho do similar, and he's missed a lot of penalties in recent times. There was a spell where he was scoring every one, and we always thought, oh, he's seen the goalkeeper move and puts it in the other corner. I'm not convinced that's always the case. I think they've got a side they're going to put it in, but they do the hop, step and jump run up and still put it in the same place and hope the goalkeeper's gone the other way. So I think there's an element of that. So it is a difficult one to look at. There are players that can do it, but they don't even need the hop, step and jump. They can run up. They're not looking at the ball. They're looking at the goalkeeper and they place it in the corner. And I do know of players that took it like that. And you think, how do they keep scoring a penalty? They don't even put any power behind it.
Mm-hmm.
They just roll it into the opposite corner and they've managed to keep an eye on Gaiska. Mendieta is one of the best. And I had conversations with Gaiska and he thinks it's the easiest thing in the world taking a penalty. And he said he has a side.
Yeah.
And if they don't move, he puts it there. If they move the other way, if they move that way, he'll put it in the other corner and it rolls in.
Yeah.
And it is all about looking at the goalkeeper. If he doesn't move, they're convinced, those penalty takers are convinced that they can roll it in the corner because if Goldie hasn't moved, he's not going to get it because they're going to be accurate to put it in the corner. So I think that it comes down to, if you're facing Lewandowski or Jorginho in a penalty, you have to take on the role with a bit of kidology as well as a goalkeeper. So they're not powerful penalties. So if you're Huaita in this instance, then kid to go right. And if he has got if he is doing that technique where he rolls it in the other corner, so move to the right, but dive to your left. You know, so you think, I think that has to come into it.
So
it is a game of personal duel, isn't it? That you can't just think, right, I'm going to throw myself to the right. Oh, he stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And you knew he was going to do that. So if you throw yourself to the right and he rolls it in the opposite corner because that's the corner he picked, then you're not going to make the save. But if he just can kid to go to the right, if he genuinely thinks he's going to slot it in the other corner because you've gone early, don't dive. Kid, move, and then spring to the left. So I think that I don't have a problem. And people complaining about the amount of, I think Rafa Benitez was complaining that there were people in the box.
Yeah.
There was people in the box from both teams. And the law of the game, I'm not sure entirely what it is, but I think if the goal is scored, I think we all would prefer it to be allowed rather than... I think once the save's made or it hits the post and then that person that's encroached in the box has the touch, I think that's when it should be
I think they've got a different standard for using VAR from the law, haven't they? I think, which is that they're not going to use VAR because otherwise, one of my fears, well, I've got many problems with VAR, was that you could be there forever taking penalties.
Exactly. Yeah, someone could just keep running in the box and in the hope that if you do it four or five times, the penalty taker eventually is going to lose his nerve and going to be worried that every time he's going to take the penalty, someone's in the box. What state would you be in then? 97th minute, Lewandowski's had five attempts and there's been five people, on five occasions, people have run in the box. Mm. And as you're running up to take the sixth attempt, you're thinking, this is gonna, what's going to happen now? I mean, you're not going to take.
The standard is they'll only use VAR if it becomes relevant, which is, I think, actually good, actually sensible. Yeah.
Especially when both teams. Celtic did have a player in the box as well. Barcelona had two or three. Mm. They were in the semicircle on the edge of the penalty box. They're all looking to gain that advantage if the save is made or hits the frame of the goal.
Yeah.
And I think once it goes, once it's a straight duel between goalkeeper and penalty taker and the outcome is conclusive, I agree. I don't think that should be retaken.
Yes. I see Napoli sacked their manager before the game. So it's a huge one. Actually, when's the second leg's up? Months away or something, isn't it? So
December, I think. I must admit, I don't enjoy the current format, the Champions League. It's
12th of March.
I would prefer to see all the games played last week.
One thing I don't get is that they kick off at the same time. I don't get that. So they clear the deck, so there's only two games per day, and then they kick off, and you can't watch them both. Anyway. So it's a hugely important game, but then Napoli are a bit of a mess. In fact, a lot of a mess. I mean, it's such a fall off for them. They were so good last season, Napoli, weren't they? And then I suppose similar to Barca, but Barca haven't fallen quite as far.
We get that in Italy sometimes. I mean, it's a surprising team that suddenly you look and I don't follow Italian football that much. I keep an eye on it, but you do suddenly get a team like Napoli that win one title and then don't again for a while. Milan have been poor and then suddenly they were good and not so good again. For years it was Juventus that were winning it.
It's better now because it was boring when Juventus won it every season. We need different teams to win the league. You want to believe. As we've said many times, the great thing about Simeone is that he gave us, all of us La Liga watchers, genuine belief that there are three teams that can win the league.
Totally.
Yeah, and it changed.
To the extent now, we get disappointed when they're in their current position because they're underachieved.
Yeah, so we might as well talk about them while we're on. So 5-0 against Las Palmas is it's a weird one, isn't it? Because Las Palmas have been really good, haven't they? Really hard to play against.
It wasn't in this game, though.
Yeah, and then suddenly, where does this come from? With Llorente and Correa up front, Griezmann didn't play at all. Presumably, just rested him because his hat was too big and weighing him down. And off almost no possession, they managed to absolutely carve them open.
Las Palmas beat them in the first game of the season, and it's one of the away defeats that has cost Atletico this season. A number of away defeats at home. Atletico was superb. I mean, it's all draws and one win. All wins and one draw. And I still thought with the lineup that Simeone picked for this match that it would be too strong for Las Palmas. But you don't know what you're going to get from Atletico at the moment. What you seem to think you're going to get is a mediocre first half and then changes at half-time and other changes and loads of different positions for Marcus Llorente during the one game. And then, they're frantically trying to score a winner, particularly in the away matches. So in this game, you're looking and think, well, I don't know what we're going to get from Atleti because Llorente and Correa up front, Morata's injured, no Griezmann, Memphis is on the bench. Some other changes made by Simeone as well with reference to the fact that they're playing Inter this week in the Champions League. And I get that. It's the one trophy, they're still involved in the Copa del Rey, but that's not advantageous having lost the first leg at home to Athletic Club. So it is a good opportunity to rest the players and with a squad Atleti have, they should be able to beat Las Palmas. I didn't think it was going to be 5-0 because Las Palmas have been defensively really good this season, but they took liberties. It's like they followed the hype and the narrative about Atleti about wasting the first half. and being too conservative, and they took liberties at the back. I mean, it was 2-0 after the 19 minutes. It could have been 4. Every time they tried to play, they tried to overplay out the back. And the two central defenders and the goalkeeper, their touch was poor, their passing was poor, and Atleti, you can see what the team took was, and the instructions were from Simeone right from the first minute of the game. When they're playing out the back, we're going to press, we're going to go and close them down, we're going to rush them into mistakes, let's test them, let's see how good they are under pressure. And it paid off. Correa was immense in this game. Mm. He played like an angry man. I mean, he's been there. We're having the same question still. 11 years he's been at Atletico Madrid. He's never been a regular. And he played like that. He played like he was furious that he's not been given the opportunities to start matches again this season. Wanted to show what he could do. And he just didn't stop harrying opponents, chasing lost causes, closing people down. And Llorente does it as well. So between the pair of them, they were all over the place. I mean, I'm seeing both those players chasing down a fullback. It was passed across to the centre-back. They were chasing that. It was passed to the goalkeeper. Then they were chasing the goalkeeper down. They were doing it as a pair. And Las Palmas still tried to play their way out the back. And it was easy pickings for Atleti. Mm-hmm. And Llorente, I hadn't forgot how good he was up front. Mm. I think it was 2021 when he scored against Liverpool, a couple of goals against Liverpool. That was a massive surprise. I never saw him as a striker. Then he continued during COVID playing up front and he was brilliant. We've barely ever seen it since then, even as substitute.
Yeah.
It must have been
2020, wasn't it? Because it was the game, there was the infamous lockdown game, wasn't it? The game.
It was. Yeah. Yeah. Well, the non-lockdown game.
Yeah. Yeah.
The last game, wasn't it, before lockdown?
Yeah. We're going to lock down because we think everyone's going to die, but we're just going to play this game first.
Yeah.
which is it?
And but we've barely ever seen it, even as a late sub. We've barely ever seen him play it from. I think it's because they've had a surplus of attacking players at the club. But it was when you get the team sheet and you're thinking, he's going to play up front. And he just a reminder, his finishing was good. His work rate is off the scale. He's quick. He has a striker's instinct for someone that plays in so many different positions. And it must surely be something, again, that Simeone must feel that he can make the most of at some stage. You know, I'm not suggesting he starts over Griezmann and Morata or Correa or Memphis, but there will be opportunities, I think, where you need a goal and you're chasing it and you've got nothing to lose and you put Llorente up front and just let him run wild, to be honest, because that's what he does. His work rate and his fitness levels are fantastic. On top of that, he's quick as well. So I don't know how he can play on a regular basis up front with his back to goal and bringing people into play and stuff like that. But as a wild card, I think it's definitely something they should use again. So him and Correa were awesome in this game.
They're well stocked, aren't they, for attackers, is the thing, isn't it? As we said before, in terms of personnel, it would seem obvious that central defence is where they're short of bodies. Although they actually had Savic, Jimenez and Ronaldo.
It's the quality.
Yeah,
you know, even Paulista, I think he's an okay La Liga central defender. But is he better than what they got? Is he going to make them better? But I don't think so.
Yeah.
So they've got an abundance of players that can play centre back.
The very best one. Don't like they chucked in Soyuncu on a free last summer.
Yeah.
Actually, go and get the very best one you can find. Don't think, oh, we'll get him because he's cheap. Yeah.
And spend all the money on the top end of the pitch and and bringing strikers in. They're well stocked in every position. They really are. A good selection of midfield players, good selection of players that can play wing back. So numbers wise, it isn't an issue with Atleti. It's just that the quality of the central defenders. And I don't want to be disrespectful. They're all really good players, but they're not of the standard that we used to associate with Simeone's centre backs.
Yes. What you were going to throw out a challenge?
Yeah, we've seen Llorente play this week again up front. We've seen Tchouaméni play at centre back, and I there's been a number of players over the years that have adapted and played in a different role to the one that they initially started in. And I just the obvious one was a Danny Alves, Jordi Alba started as wingers, converted to fullbacks. That was kind of set that a theme running where that happened in a lot of different places. Gareth Bale was a left back converted to a world class superstar left winger, and we have this issue now where people are saying that Real Madrid, for instance, centre back crisis. Tchouaméni's gone back there, and he's been awesome at centre back. I think Camavinga could play there as well. And I just wonder, then now we're seeing Llorente playing in all these different positions and now playing up front as well. What the managers must see something in training where a player is versatile and flexible, as he's flexible enough to change. I wonder if any of the listeners have got any ideas of an unusual player that they thought he could play here, he could play there, as opposed to the one position we've always associated him with, and why they would think that, what attributes are needed to play in these different roles. I mean, it used to happen more, I have to be honest. When squads were smaller, versatile players were useful, players that could play in different positions. I played in pretty much a 4-4-2 all my life, but I played up front, I played wide on both sides, and I played central midfield. And there were times when you were able to do that during a game or from the start of a match. I had my preferred position, and most of the time it was a centre forward, but there was I would say probably a third of my games I played out of position in my career, and because I could play, my attributes, I could play wide, occasionally central midfield. More often than not, it was in a wide position, but I did play centre midfield as well. And it just makes me wonder how many of these managers are looking and thinking, well, they've got bigger squads now, so it doesn't happen.
Yeah. So come up
when they're forced into it, it can be successful.
So name a player. So if you want to do this on Twitter, I do get very often. So at Terry Gibson 88, isn't it? And at Driscoll FC, or if you're a Patreon, obviously you can message us.
We see Oscar Mengeza this week a couple of the weeks up front, and he was good.
So give us a player, give us whatever players that you think could be converted to other positions. That's essentially what we're asking. I always thought, going back to one of my favourite all-time La Liga players, Choquero, I always thought he would have been a brilliant right-back. And
I thought you were going to say that.
Yeah,
exactly.
Someone told him. He wore two. Someone told him once upon a time that he was a striker, but his technique was absolutely terrible, and he couldn't be a striker because you need a good technique, because if you're going to operate in tight areas, up and down, sprinting around, doing all of that bit, he was brilliant, but...
Players in back in the day used to be able to play centre back and centre forward.
Yeah,
because height was really important at centre back. It isn't as much now, so that was always an obvious one. That
John Toshack, classic. We're getting old men chat here, but John Toshack was a centre forward, wasn't he? Won the title, of course, in Spain, didn't he? He was Real Sociedad, then Real Madrid manager. But he'd scored like 100 and 200 goals for Liverpool or something, and then he played as a sweeper for Swansea towards the end of his career. So there we are, players change. So if you come up with any, let us know. I'm trying to think. So players that you think could be converted to a new position.
And Christensen is another one at the moment.
Yeah.
Centre-back playing holding midfield. Not a great deal of difference, but there is something something there that you look and you think, maybe he's certainly not Busquets in that role, but he's actually, as the games are going on there, he's doing a decent job. So managers must see it and have an idea. And then, it'd be interesting to see if anyone can come up with any good ones that we hadn't thought of.
Yeah. So let's talk about Real Madrid with Tchouaméni playing as a centre-back. There was one, actually, in the Copenhagen game. One of the chance... No, hang on, the Leipzig game. Sorry, mixing up. So in the Leipzig game, when he played centre-back, there was a moment, one of the chances that Šeško had, Tchouaméni was... By the time he had the shot, he must have been 10 yards away from him. And I was thinking, that's because he's not a centre-back. I agree with you. He's only played a couple of games, hasn't he? But I think when it's straightforward centre-back play and you can do it like a midfielder, I think he's been brilliant. A little bit of movement, though. He just made the wrong run and the striker lost him. And you're thinking, you've lost him massively there because you're not a centre-back and you don't... And it only takes a second.
I think at times you can lack that instinct.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not forgetting.
Yeah.
It's not when you're playing midfield or in your normal position, your instinct is like that. You have a certain instinct to that position.
Yeah.
And occasionally, I think when you're playing out position, your instinct takes you in the wrong position.
Yeah.
And for a split second, you can get killed at the top level.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the big difference. The one thing you have to overcome is your natural instinct can overtake what you're meant to be doing, which is a different job.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And someone does something clever against you, then you haven't given it any thought. And like you say, you haven't racked up the game time at centre back.
That's it.
Yeah. So they dropped points in the end, having. It was the opening goal. So it was 1-1 draw. They took the lead early on against Rayo, and then Rayo came back with a penalty and equalised. We'll get to Carvajal's red card later. Weirdly, the first goal comes from... There's this discussion now about how much coaches like to control situations and how much chaos you're allowed. Rayo would have scored that goal because there's utter chaos, because Lunin played a terrible pass.
Pass out.
So he put his own team under pressure. They have to defend desperately. Rayo then commit players forward, understandably, because they think there's a chance to grab the ball and score a goal. And then Rayo Madrid counterattack and score a goal. And you think, right, they've basically scored that because Lunin made a terrible pass and opened up the game.
But they have the players to do that, Rayo Madrid. It's not just the attacking players. In this case, it's Valverde. He's one of the most prominent for counter-attacking football because he can run huge distances really fast. So he would have been back trying to rectify the chaos that was going on at the back. And then in the blink of an eye, he's able to run 50, 60 yards and cross a ball for Hossolu to finish. And you're right, Rayo committed 8 or 9 players into that 2 or 3 seconds where the ball was played out by Lunin. It was a horrible pass out. It was messed up by Real Madrid. Then it was messed up by Raúl de Tomás, who should have got his shot away, but he didn't. He got confused with a teammate that was in the close area proximity to him. Between the pair of them, they messed it up. And within 5 seconds, the ball's in the attacking half, final third, cross, goal. And that Real Madrid are possibly the best team around at doing that now.
Yeah.
Because they have those players that give the... I call it horsepower now because it's like, you know, you get these really fast cars that can really put their foot down. And that's why they cost a lot of money. And you see the players that Real Madrid have got, whether they've spent a lot of money, not in the case of Valverde, but he's worth a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah.
They're thoroughbreds. They're different breeds.
He's 1 horsepower. His heart must be the size of a horse, mustn't it?
Exactly. And Camavinga can do that. Tchouaméni can do that. Bellingham can do that as well in midfield. So that's when you're opened up. And what can you do if you're Rayo? You've got an opportunity there. You've squeezed up. You're all in the attacking half. Real Madrid have messed up.
You've got to go for it. Yeah.
You've got to go for it. Knowing you don't do it thinking, oh, but if we mess this up, they're going to be picking the ball out the back of the net in five to 10 seconds. You can't think like that. In an ideal world as a coach, you would want 2 or 3 of your players to think, no, I'm going to stay here because it doesn't happen. It's like when you're defending a corner, you're attacking a corner against Real Madrid. And that's been going on since Ronaldo days.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, everyone back behind the ball for Real Madrid, but you know, as soon as it's clear, it's going to be a race to the other end of the pitch. And so it's something they've always been good at. But with this particular group of players, how lethal when it comes to a counter-attack. You've got Vinicius and you've got Rodrigo and you've got Bellingham and they're flying. They've all come back for a set piece or they're back behind the ball defending and you lose the ball in 2 or 3 passes. They're cutting through. So it was an interesting goal, to be honest. As you said, from seconds between a good chance for Rayo and they didn't get the shot away, so suddenly Real Madrid leading. It was a legitimate goal. It was on an offside. And taking the lead. And I have to be honest, from then on, I'm thinking, well, that's, you know, this is a team that have only won one game at home this season. I know they've got a new manager, but this is going to happen time and time again in this match. If they do have possession, they do commit players forward, then Real Madrid will just pick them off. So I was really surprised that Real Madrid dropped points from that situation. Then we look at the performance of Real Madrid and we look at it and we go, yeah, he rested players. There are players injured. Still a better starting 11 than Rayo had. Maybe it was the pace of the game for Real Madrid was lower than it should have been. But then you look at their results this season, you look at the recent matches that they've had, it's been a pile-on, to be honest. They've been going game after game after game and not rotating an awful lot. And dropping points against the team that have only won one home game this season. I wouldn't want to be too critical of Real Madrid. And I think that's what Ancelotti said in his performance. He couldn't ask for much more from his players. I wouldn't criticise his team selection for resting people and bringing new players in. They've got the talent, the squad is there. On top of the injured players, it's a risk, of course, when you haven't got so many of the first-choice players. But he couldn't have asked for any more. So it's a difficult place for Real Madrid to go. Normally, I didn't expect it to be this season. But I think Real just had that little bit more of an edge in this match because of the new manager all the stuff that comes with that.
Fair enough.
So disappointing result for Real Madrid. Excellent for Real, but I don't want to pile in and criticise Ancelotti and Real Madrid on this one game.
Fair enough, handball, Camavinga.
Yes. The ball's travelling toward goal.
Yeah.
So VAR sorted that out. Took longer than it should have done. And the referee looked like nearly convincing because as soon as you see it, I made up my mind straight away it's a penalty. I think most people did. But it took VAR long enough to get him to go across and then him to be convinced.
So I
thought it was...
He jumps to block the ball.
One of those where VAR could say to me, no, it's a penalty.
Yeah. They could speed it up. They really need to try and speed it up, don't they?
Referee... Has to have trust with VAR.
I don't think there's any thought given to speeding things up with VAR. They're obsessed with not getting it wrong, I think is an absolute obsession. But they forget the spectacle because he jumps.
And that was understandable.
And his hand comes away from his body, doesn't it, as he jumps to block the ball, and it's fair enough. That's a pen.
Yeah. And the ball's travelling directly to goal.
Yeah.
So it's stopping an attempt at goal. And there has to be trust between referee and VAR. I mean, it's... And I understand why the referee didn't see it.
Yeah,
the ball
fair
was
enough.
It was quick. It was. Yeah. I'm not convinced that I did. I can't see where that hit him.
Mm.
There wasn't too many appeals from Rio players. It wasn't a vociferous one. It was one or two.
He's twisting, isn't he? And it's only when you see the replay you think actually his hands come away from his body. Clearly,
and the Rio players were waiting in the corner.
Yeah.
They were lining up. They weren't
around
the referees. One or two were. Yeah. But
it's actually a good use of VAR. They just need to speed up
and
do it quickly. Because on the replay, it was clear. Can I ask you, so Carvajal...
And then the interesting thing, Raul de Thomas as well.
Go on.
Taking the penalty. It was a risk, Raul de Thomas. And I'm glad Inigo Perez has come in and gone, boom, put him up front.
Yeah.
No one's scoring a lot of goals for Raul. They spent a lot of money on Raul de Thomas. And I do always think there is a responsibility from a manager, which might have helped Francisco get the push, to try and, if Raya had done often spend £8 million on a player.
Mm.
So I do think there is a responsibility from the manager to try and get the best out of such an investment from a club such as Raya. Mm-hmm. So I was pleased Nico Perez puts him in. The conversation between him and Issy Palazon looked really intense. It wasn't one where they were arguing over his, they weren't arguing. Because Issy Palazon is the penalty taker, but Raul de Thomas wanted it. It's against his former club. He hasn't scored a goal this season. It's not going well for him. His reputation has taken a battering. And I was looking at a conversation and I was wondering if it was a bit more sinister and a bit more cynical than we all thought, whether it may be Issy Palazon saying, you sure you're up for it? You know, I normally take them, blah, blah, blah. I wonder if there was negotiations on the goal bonus that was going on. Because Issy Palazon, I'm pretty sure we'll be on a goal bonus.
Yeah.
And he's probably thinking, he doesn't
earn a lot of money, does he, famously, Issy Palazon?
Yeah. Exactly. And I'm thinking, I wonder if Issy Palazon is saying, I'll get like £5,000 if I knock this in the back of the net. What's going to happen here then? And Raul de Thomas, I don't know.
Mm.
I'll give you half or
you
can have it. I just want the goal. But it was an interesting, luckily it didn't turn into one of those where they're fighting over the ball and have other teammates having to separate them. I don't like it when I see that.
It's a problem with goal bonuses. It hadn't really occurred to me that, but it's a problem, isn't it? Because
it
you
is,
are a team, aren't you? So you know the times at which they should be set at a level where it shouldn't be on your mind to be thinking. If you're 4-0 up and you get a penalty or something, or then you might think, I'll I'll take that because I want the money.
I'm going to get paid.
Yeah.
In that case, it might have been Mel de Thomas. Issy Palazzo might have said to him, I'll get $5,000 if I score. Mm. Mel de Thomas might say, I'll get 10.
Yeah.
I'll give him a gift.
Yeah.
We both can win here.
Yeah.
I might be cynical, but it did look an interesting. It looked like negotiations were going on rather than, I'm taking it. No, you're not. I am.
Yeah.
I'm the penalty taker, but I fancy this. It wasn't one of those. It looked like negotiations going on between two players discussing how they were going to split the goal bonus.
So two more things on Real Madrid. Danny Carvajal's red. So he came on 75 and manages to get two yellow cards. Got two yellow cards in stoppage time, didn't they, for arguing? Yes. And then they were both fine decisions. No argument.
I was annoyed Kike Perez goes down holding the face, though.
Right, yeah.
Carvajal catches him in the chest, but he does throw his arm out.
Yeah.
There was no need for Kike Perez. I mean, go down if you're going to, by all means, but hold the right part of the body, which you hit at the contact, rather than holding your face when he clearly hit him in the chest.
Yeah.
That's something I keep saying that should be looked at.
Yeah, there should be some punishment. Because sometimes both players are in the wrong. Because Carvajal deserved a yellow card, but he's also feigning injury, isn't he? They're both in the wrong. Yeah.
Being suspended, they've got injury issues.
Yeah.
Look, Vasquez will play there again in the next game, and you would have thought Danny Carvajal is past all that now, coming on and being really aggressive and over aggressive. He does get away with a few as well. But on this occasion, he didn't. It wasn't costly, but it doesn't help his team in the next game.
Yeah, and Mbappe. So, another discussion about Kylian Mbappe's transfer. We just finished recording for the Patreons, and I was thinking, do we need to go back on and record another one? Don't know, because we've been here so many times with this Mbappe story. So he's leaving PSG for good.
Confirmed.
Yeah. What has confirmed me? Because if they come back with another offer, until he signs for somebody else, he hasn't left, has he?
Well, the allegations are now that it is done.
Yeah.
There has been paperwork done, agreed, between him and Real Madrid and his advisors. I think it's his mother, I think, has told PSG that's the case and not to bother about making any more offers.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I hope so. We've been waiting for the guy for so long. Right, when he signs, I will drop my cynical view and I'll look forward to him playing.
At
the moment, having gone through this two consecutive summers, for Real Madrid's squad, I think to have been left with a hole in it for 2 years with money unspent, he owes them one. And he owes them to be brilliant when he arrives. I'll get over that cynicism. But for now, I'm thinking, just tell us he's signed. Will you stop messing around? Tell us he's signed.
It's not just the respect thing. I guess it is respect to PSG because they're still challenging for everything they can this season.
But if we all know, then why not just tell us?
I mean, look, Luis Enrique left him out and left him on the bench last week in the game.
Yeah.
Because of the speculation, brought him off the bench and he scored. It's something we should become accustomed to now, but I guess Mbappe wants to avoid any criticism if PSG don't win what they should, or if they don't go through against Real Sociedad. They probably will go through against Real Sociedad, but you don't know. Real Sociedad have found some goals again. But I guess he wants to avoid any criticism that comes his way in the build-up to matches and stuff. Is he going to be mentally prepared to play the rest of the season at full pelt? For PSG, is he going to coast? Is he going to try and avoid injury? Is he going to give his all those things?
But all of those things exist anyway, because we all know we don't necessarily, like I say, we sort of largely know what's going to happen, but given the fact that he's led us down the garden path twice before, maybe not. But just get on with it. Just announce the signing. Honestly, it's just becoming frustrating.
I guess it's just to avoid discomfort, isn't it, with PSG fans and stuff, even though everybody assumes and knows, because there hasn't been anybody else that has genuinely believed they could sign Mbappe.
Other than the Saudi clubs, I guess.
But he was never going to go there. I mean, there will be a time, probably, if he does need any more money. Jesus, I don't know how that's going to be the case. But there was one or two clubs in the Premier League, and every time I read it, oh, no chance. No, he's not going there. It's Real Madrid, and I'd be amazed if there's no one else that can.
About the tactical side. I don't particularly, given that how flexible they are up front anyway. So he'll just be another brilliant, flexible striker.
Yeah, I've seen enough of him he can play anywhere up front. And we talk about that, how exhilarating it is to watch them on a counter-attack, but he turns up.
Yeah,
it's just going to I'm looking forward to seeing it. And you know, there are teams in La Liga now that will be thinking it's going to make it even harder when you see how young and how quick and energetic and athletic Real Madrid are. Mm-hmm. With all the quality that we associate with a Real Madrid player, it's going to be fascinating to see him, Mbappe, turn up. And get to know him more as a person, as a personality. What I've seen in World Cups and Champions Leagues, he's a brilliant footballer.
Mm.
You can't pin him down in one position up front. So I think he fits the bill as an attacking player for Real Madrid. It's when it happens next season, when he does wear the all-white kit at Real Madrid, it's going to bring a whole new element to La Liga. In terms of star quality, there's no doubt about that.
Girona, I have genuinely seen people criticising them the last few. They've let it all down by losing to Real Madrid and then Athletic. It was always two very, very tough games, and they were a brilliant goal line clearance away from coming back and getting a draw at a very tough place to go. Athletic are a very good team, aren't they? It was a cracking game, and right team won, I guess, in the end.
Yeah, I didn't give Girona a prayer when they went 3-1 down.
Yeah,
not a prayer, but not only because of the scoreline, but the way the game was being played and how dominant Athletic Club were.
Mm.
Forget the possession, Girona had that, but every time Athletic Club attacked, I mean, they scored three, probably should have been about six. All three goals came about because of mistakes from Girona. Alex Garcia with the first one, the crossfield pass across the edge of his own penalty area, which led to the first goal. Miguel Gutierrez makes a mistake for goals two and three, glaring mistakes, which is that they haven't been doing that this season. And those two players have been absolutely fantastic this season. And at 3-1 down, when they've made those three mistakes and been punished, and you know they got away with other opportunities that Athletic Club missed, or Gazzaniga made saves, I didn't give them a prayer. And then they suddenly, Eric Garcia scores from a set piece. And then they, for 20 minutes, over 20 minutes, they certainly had enough of the play, enough attempts, enough players in attacking positions. As you said, Danny Vivian's header off the line from John Solis was defining. It saved the game for Athletic Club, who were fantastic. Again, highest goal scorers in La Liga, must be at home, must be one of the highest goal scorers at home in any league when you look at the goals they've racked up in home matches. They are quite a contrast between them at home and away. But at home, when they get their noses in front, and it only took 2 minutes. I mean, the first mistake from Alex Garcia was 2 minutes. Berenguer scores the first goal. He gets the second, and that was an important goal because Sienkov had equalised. And it was 49 minutes Sienkov, 56 minutes Berenguer. But that seven-minute spell, it looked as if Girona were going to get get the next goal. So that was a defining goal, Berenguer's second, and then Naki Williams gets the third. You're thinking then that's it, done and dusted. This could be another hammering for Girona because of the way that they were defending. But they showed, you know, great dedication, determination and spirit to get the second, and were lucky in the end not to get the equaliser. Probably should have done. So it was a really good game to watch. I loved Iñaki Williams' behaviour during the incident where a supporter was taken ill. That was because they've suffered with that before this season, haven't they? Where a supporter did unfortunately pass away at a game. You saw the emotion from Iñaki Williams while the crowd was silent, and that was nice to witness. And thankfully, all turned out well, I believe. I really enjoyed that Monday night game. It was.
Yeah,
can't always say that, but Monday night matches, but when it was a good one.
Monday night game. However, Athletic never seem to. They always seem to be on a. I've looked that up actually. It's a rough impression I've got that they don't play a lot of weekend games. So they are actually playing.
They're
next
not
Sunday.
In Europe, are they? So they're the best
the four guy, aren't they? Yeah. So their last three La Liga games have been Monday, Friday, haven't they? So yeah, it's just a sort of. I guess it's just a run. Yeah, and I guess it's. The easy one because the others are in Europe. But why not play the Champions League teams on the Friday?
Exactly. I think there is a Barcelona Friday match coming up.
Right, okay.
Which must be prior to the second leg against Napoli.
Yeah, that would make sense.
So I'm not sure when that is.
Oh, 8th of March. Yeah, so yes, it is. Yeah, home to Mallorca on the Friday night before they play Napoli on the Tuesday. So yeah.
That makes total sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Give a Champions League team, particularly when there's only one or two in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can really go out of your way to help your leagues.
Yeah. Interplay Friday ahead of Atleti later. Real Sociedad, they had a disappointing performance, wasn't it, against PSG in the Champions League? Because I was, it was only 2-0, so it's not disastrous, but. They weren't great, but they got a win against Mallorca, 93rd minute, cracking header by Mikel Merino that wrapped it up. The red card in this one, Terry, was game changing, wasn't it? The Raya one. It was game changing, wasn't it? Because he gets sent off for clapping. Yeah.
Well, it's not just a sending off for clapping. He actually wins the free kick. The foul goes to Mallorca.
Yeah.
But the referee goes across and has a word with him about a reaction to the foul that he just received. And Rayo had a little argue with the ref over that. And then the referee booked him for his reaction to being awarded a free kick to the foul. And the referee sort of admonishing him, telling him, waving his finger, and Rayo said something and picked up the yellow card. So first of all, he hasn't done anything wrong to pick up the first yellow, to be honest. His team had been awarded the free kick, but the referee felt he still needed to get involved and tell Rayo to behave himself. And then there was a slight sarcastic clap from Rayo as the referee was walking away.
Yeah, it's not in his face or anything, is it?
It's not in his face.
Yeah.
I think there was at one stage, I wasn't convinced the referee saw it because he was walking away. He must have heard a clap and then showed an instant second yellow. I'm not entirely sure, but I think I've seen this before with this referee where he's booked a player in that fashion twice in the space of seconds. And I just felt it, 11, we want to keep 11v11 on it unless it's ridiculous and it's an obvious,
Yeah, it's an interesting statement that, because I don't think that as a ref you're obliged to try and keep players on if they do something wrong.
But it has to be worthwhile. It has to be justified.
I also think you should defend referees from being abused, but that wasn't abuse. It was a sarcastic gesture after he's already been booked and he's walking away. That's not something to change a game about.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. A justifiable 11v10 advantage for one team. It didn't need that. And then from then on, all hell broke loose. I mean, Rayo loses his head as he's coming off. And then I think there was two people sent off from the bench from Mallorca. I think the goalkeeping coach got a red card. The warm-up coach that warms the substitutes up, he got a red card.
Yeah, it was a big loss.
Yeah.
Unused
sub got sent off after the whistle. Is it Siba van der Heijden got sent off for remonstrating with the referee after the game as well? It didn't need to happen. Antonio Rayo has to be, take his fair share of it, to be honest. I mean, if you are aware the referee might do that, don't do the clap. Don't run that risk. It's the same as Danny Blind the week before when he went over to the referee after the match. He wasn't being aggressive to the referee, but he he was the one that was at risk of picking up a suspension.
Yeah.
As it turned out, he was injured anyway, so he wouldn't have played against Real Madrid. So as players, it's easy to sit here and say, be more responsible, be in the heat of the moment, the emotion. Mallorca are suffering a bit this season in La Liga. I just feel there is an element that a referee can sometimes ignore something. If it's not...
Yeah, it's really, it's match management. And your match management is not sending players off for being a bit rude to you.
Yeah.
And it's different. If he was in the face, if he was screaming and shouting at him...
100%.
Jurgen Klopp to the assistant referee in the game last year. Absolutely, send him off straight away. Unacceptable. You can't be screaming in people's faces. Fair enough. He wasn't doing that, was he? Right. So,
no.
But anyway, Real Sociedad's got some goals.
Take Kubo gets the first. It's the winning goal that I was pleased about. Not pleased about in terms of, oh, yes, Real Sociedad beat Mallorca. But I did make the point about getting bodies in the box. There was four people in the box when that cross comes in. And one of those bodies I'm talking about that needs to get in the box on a more regular basis is Mikel Merino. And he is capable of scoring that type of goal. Header at the far post. We haven't seen that enough of him from him lately. And it must have been something that was discussed. You know, they must be looking for solutions to why they're not scoring goals. And one of those is fringe attacking players have to contribute more to help the strikers. And in that case, the ball comes in the box. That Mallorca are down to 10 men. It's the 93rd minute. Real Sociedad are desperate for the win. They've got people in the box then. And that made the difference. Last week, the week before against PSG, that gets cleared because there was not enough players in there. Mm. So that was the difference in this game. That sometimes football's so simple. We're going to cross the ball. We need more than one player in the box. It's that obvious. You don't need the stats and you don't need everything. And you don't need analysts. You're watching it and you're thinking, well, we're crossing it and there's no one in. We're not going to score. Most goals are scored in the penalty box.
Yeah.
And if you don't get players in there, then you're not sure.
It's hard to score a header when you are marked. And most goals, when people say, oh, that was a really good cross, they should have scored from it. Most headed goals, I can't prove this, but my theory is most headed goals are scored when a guy has escaped his marker and has that split second to guide the ball in, to think about what you're going to do with your header. I think if you're competing, it's much harder to score the goal, isn't it? So therefore, if you put more in, you're more likely to get the isolated player who is then likely to score the goal.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it causes confusion, chaos. And suddenly you've got, in a split moment, a defender's got to make a decision which one to mark and a midfield player doesn't track a runner, which is probably in this case. Marino's a midfield player. He's being marked by a midfield player. Someone hasn't tracked him. They've passed him on. When there's just one player in there and it's the centre forward, you've got two centre halves and a midfield player's not able to track back. And a goalkeeper can come and probably collect in an empty penalty area. So it is really important. And it's interesting we talk about that point because one of the games we haven't spoken about yet is one where a 0-0 draw, we got a couple of those to tidy up. Valencia, Sevilla.
Yeah.
Sevilla, I did the analysis at half time. And Nesiri and Isaac Romero barely touched. I think it was two touches in the penalty box in the first half. I think between them, they'd had about 18 touches in the whole game. So that was a plan for a team playing away from home. They weren't looking to flood the penalty box. They were looking to flood their own penalty box to defend out of respect to their opponent. Valencia have got a great home record this season. And they went there to just defend, and that they weren't fussed. But with Real Sociedad not scoring goals on a regular basis, they needed to do something different. Sevilla, on the other hand, on the back of some decent results, go to Valencia, lock up, and that paid off in that game. Valencia couldn't break them down despite having possession and most of it being in the attacking half. It was a good, solid, away from home performance from a team that need points, and Sevilla were able to pick that up. But so Kike Sanchez Royce doesn't have to be too worried about the few touches that Romero and Nesiri had, because it was everyone else back behind the ball. They're going to be nice and solid and try and eke out a draw, which they did.
Do you want the stats on that? Sevilla's XG, 0.04, that came from one shot. So, yeah.
Well, that's going to happen to Valencia now, because when they start the season up with Valencia, they just avoided relegation. They've got all these young players. They didn't make too many significant signings. And you're thinking, many of us, possibly me included, this is at least thought it was going to be a tough season. And I wondered whether it would be a relegation dogfight for Valencia and Baraka. But they've been superb, really. They've been enjoyable to watch. And their home form, most of their wins have come at home. They've beaten some good teams at home. They've got some good teams to play at home. And I think teams are going to go there now and pay more respect than what people would have done in the first half of the season. Mm. Because playing at Mestalla is always difficult. But this group of young players, it is difficult. And I don't blame Kike Sanchez Flores for going there, playing in that way and getting another point. I think it's 4 unbeaten, 2 wins, 2 draws. They're heading in the right direction now.
Yeah. Right. So we've got 3 more games. We'll try and speed up. Almeria, what were they? They were in front for 66 minutes against Granada. But like you say, it's impossible for them to win a game. Yeah.
And this result is the worst result possible for both of them, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you're looking at it and you're thinking, if you're Celta and you're Cadiz above them and one or two others, I'm looking at Mallorca is probably still involved in it. I think Sevilla are going to be all right, Rayo, Villarreal. So there's not a lot of teams involved in that relegation battle this season. I don't expect there to be. So for these two, Almeria got no chance. I mean, it's what we got, 13 games to go. They've got to win 10 of them to get to 30. That would take Almeria to 38 points.
Yeah.
That might not be enough. So they're not going to win. They're not staying up. And Granada, I think, have a chance. Their gap is close. So they're 14 points. They're 6 from safety. But they've got to start winning games. And Medina was moaning about VAR and they've all gone against him. One or two went his way in this game. And it was a must win. And then, to be fair, Granada were the more assertive team. A ridiculous amount of shots. They just can't get a win either. So the draw... Azuni gets the equaliser with a decent goal. But the first goal from Almeria, Mark Pubir, with one of the goals of the weekend, was a stunning goal. So neither team can win. It's astonishing. Week 25 and Almeria haven't won a game yet. We've had it a few years on the trot now, haven't we? But teams that just can't win a game of football.
Yeah.
Now they've got promotion, but don't they?
In various different ways as well this season. If they go through not winning, we'll all remember the
and they're not terrible. They're not useless, Almeria. Yeah. They're not getting smashed every week, 5-0. Yeah. I don't know how, as a footballer, you manage to continue playing when you've gone 25 games without a win and 3 games at the end of last season for some of these players. I think something like 28 games without a win. 28 games without a winner. 8 drives you mad, let alone 28. Yeah. So we had Levante last season, Simba, didn't we?
Yeah.
And there was someone else as well.
They did all right towards the end of the season. Was it Elche a couple of years ago? Yeah.
They got some respectability back.
Yeah.
There's been 3 of these in recent seasons. I can't remember. Was it Elche?
I think so. So last season, Elche got 25 points. Let's have a look at I think that was a rally, wasn't it, towards the end of the season? So, hang on. Yeah.
There'll be scenes of players in tears because they'd won a game and...
Yeah. So Elche won. Actually, to be fair, Elche won a game in February. So they won a game by now. They won a game February the 4th that season, and then they've unbeaten in the last 5. So that's how they got to 25. They actually rallied towards the end when it was all done. And then Levante. Let me look up Levante.
It's a shame we get this, isn't it? Because it kind of it nullifies the relegation battle, which is part of the excitement that we get, that we hope to get in any league. You know, 6 or 7 teams battling it out to stay up. I don't think it's going to be that case. I think 2 are going to go. And then if Cadiz have won a game for 21 matches, they're probably going to go as well.
Yeah.
I do feel Celta have got enough to rally and get some results, which will take them away from Cadiz. Or, you know, we're going to have to see a significant shift in terms of Cadiz have got to start scoring goals. They can't draw every game. Look to keep a clean sheet, stay up by nil-nils.
Yeah.
So it's a shame that we've had this sequence of teams just not being competitive in terms of results.
Yeah, yeah, it was. So again, Levante won in January the 8th, their first game that season. In fact, they didn't even, they weren't even bottom by the end of the season because they were quite good once they won that game, but it's too late. Like you say, even if Almeria start winning games now, they'd need to suddenly to be Real Madrid to get out of this situation, wouldn't they? Let alone, you know, so Villarreal form is not enough to get them out, or Getafe form. That's not going to save them, is it? You know, it's got to be top of the league form.
9 or 10 wins.
So Villarreal 1, Getafe 1. That was the Friday night. Seems a long time ago. I can't remember. I actually can't remember.
I was there in the studios in Barcelona, so it was the first one. And I found it an enjoyable game.
Yeah.
It was Getafe. We're not going to change the narrative from Bordeaux about their hard working, they're aggressive. They still are. They've got some tidy players as well. And there is an element of we are overlooking the fact that, you know, that they do all those borderless things. But also, you know, he has Jordi Martin as a young player. He's decent. Carlos Alenyek off the bench. Mason Greenwood is a good player. Luis Mia in midfield is technically a good player. And Getafe take the lead, Maximovic. It was, I think, that funny enough, it was, I think, one of two touches they had in the penalty box in the first half, and that came from a set piece. Poorly defended, it was Yerson Mosquera, headed clearance straight to Maximovic, who tucked the chance away. And then Villarreal, it was against the run of play, clearly. Villarreal get the equaliser, Alberto Moreno, it was quite unfortunate for Getafe. They blocked two shots, and this fell kindly for Alberto Moreno, who tucked it away well. And then, because of the way the game had gone, you're thinking there's only one winner here, and it's going to be Villarreal. And Getafe rallied and played some really good stuff. And the last 10, 15 minutes made for a really exciting end because both teams were going for the win. And Getafe had their chances, to be honest. And I enjoyed that game on Friday evening. It's the last two games Getafe have been involved in, I've enjoyed for different reasons. The win against Celta, and Celta came back from 2-0 down, 2-2, and then Getafe won it in the end. And this game was an entertaining game as well. 34 points, Getafe. I've got a big tick next to them on my chart this week that what they've done this season has been above what I expected, to be honest.
And then the big Sunday night game, Betis 0, Alaves 0. Signed a lot of forwards, Betis, but they still can't score many goals, basically.
Well, I was interested in the European Conference game. Hardly any of the new players were playing. I haven't got to the bottom of it other than they're not eligible. Why? I mean, other teams have signed players in the...
You can register players afresh.
Yeah, I don't get why none of them play.
And why no one was there.
They had this issue in the Europa League when Xavi Riyad signed but couldn't play. Mm. They didn't have a centre-back. They played the midfielders at centre-back. They were forced to because they didn't have any that were fit and eligible. And now players are not eligible for the Conference League. So they didn't play in that, so they got the opportunity to play in this one. It's going to take a 3 or 4 games, I would imagine, for the new attacking setup that Pellegrini wants to employ and for players to settle in. You know, one or two players are injured. Obviously, Perez has been missing lately. Isco is missing lately. Fekir has just come back from injury. Chimiavada has just signed. Fornals has just signed. Bakambu come off the bench. I still believe that they're going to be fun to watch before the season finishes.
Yeah.
But disappointing result against Dinamo Zagreb.
Lost 1-0 at home.
And I couldn't get to watch it. Couldn't find it. And then when I look at the team, I'm thinking, but where are all these players?
It was disappointing, though, because I think they should try and win that tournament. Because they could win it and then have won a European trophy. But it was like the fans normally ran packed, didn't it? But it was empty. The team didn't seem that bothered. It was really disappointing.
It's almost a sense of irritation that we have this race for European football. And
when they get in it, it's like, we have to play this now.
Thursday night games. And it yeah, it takes me. They're so competitive, and they celebrate, and then the following season.
Yeah. Play a weekend team. Oh, it's Thursday night.
Try and cruise through the group stages and get knocked out and fall into the next tournament and lose to Rangers twice.
Yeah. It frames the whole narrative of the season for about half the teams in the league. Can you qualify for Europe? Or can we get into Europe? Or watch out, they might not qualify for Europe this season. That would be a disaster. And then they get in and think, oh, well, can't be bothered now.
And Betis needed a good bunny because Sevilla have dominated that, haven't they? And Sevilla are not their best version. Yeah. And it was a chance for Betis to make a dent and make an impact in the city of Sevilla, in European football, and to address that competition properly. But the fact they don't get players eligible, the fact they're playing weird teams, and it's a lack of a desire to travel in the competition, further in the competition, really is irritating me with Betis this year. I think that the players they've got, they should still be in the Europa League.
Try and win the Conference League. You're not Real Madrid. You know what I mean? You haven't got.
I don't think Betis have ever won a European competition.
No, they've hardly won one league and a couple of cups ever.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can't be dismissive of a competition that you're in. But anyway, there we are. Right. So we'll leave it there. We'll come back and do a bit of European stuff for the Patreons, and we've got another round of La Liga games to come next week. So thank you, everybody, for supporting us and for listening. And we'll see you for another podcast soon.